The northeast of England has produced its fair share of surrealist comedians, but long before Ross Noble took us on fantastical flights of imagination, or Vic and Bob went for a big night out, our television screens were graced by another northeast comedy legend. And his story does seem like the stuff of legends. How does a working class lad from South Shields with no musical ability come to have his songs played on BBC Radio? And how does the same person with no previous experience of live comedy come to provide the regular comedy slot on what was, unquestionably at the time, and maybe even now, the nation's coolest music show? Oh, and have his photograph in national newspapers wearing an artificial nose the same length as a standard dartboard. Welcome to the weird and wonderful world of Wavis O'Shave. Hello, and welcome to Jesters, the forgotten stories of Northeast comedy. Each episode tells the story of a comedian or performer from the Northeast that shaped the comedy of the area. So who was Wavis O'Shave? Well, we'll get there, but if you want a modern day equivalent, there really isn't one. You can imagine Ross Noble or the Mighty Boosh releasing comedy songs, but they just don't. And there are people like Lad Baby or Weird Al Yankovic who produce parody songs, but nothing with the straightforward surrealism of Wavis's Mr. Owl Ate My Metal Worm, Mauve Shoes Are Awful, or Dennis Smokes Tabs, all while going on to create multiple comedy characters. From today's vantage point, it's difficult to appreciate that Wavis O'Shave was once regularly seen on national television and heard on radio, and gave the country a catchphrase that was shouted in schoolyards across the land to howls of laughter. It's probably a sad testimony to the speed of the modern world that the name Wavis O'Shave has been pushed to the fringes of modern consciousness. Now, it's fair to say that Wavis O'Shave is not his real name. He's not descended from a proud line of South Shields O'Shaves. But then again, neither is his name Fofo Spearjig, Hootsie Tabernacle, Mustafa Doorink, Lord Lobsang Coldseamwig, Mr. Stary Oot, or even his most famous creation, The Hard. For Wavis, names are just temporary and you can put them on or take them off as easily as a hat. Or an 18-inch artificial nose. More on that later. And nobody in his world gets to keep the name they were born with. Wavis' longtime friend, Paul Tisman, explains.
There wasn't many people that went under a real name. He had nicknames for everybody. He referred to his own parents with nicknames. His mother was known as Migla. His father, he referred to as Bone. I had a few, but I think he used to know me as Heed Fuzz. When I had hair, it used to be long and unruly and frizzy, you know.
It's the 1970s, a decade when the UK was facing up to stark economic hardships, and the population had somehow failed to notice that the combination of bell-bottom jeans, mullet hairstyles, and extra-wide ties didn't add up to sartorial elegance. The post-war boom had evaporated, and the only thing giving the population a much-needed lift was their 10-centimetre-tall platform shoes. We'll never know if this bleak backdrop played a role in Wavis's need to create humour, though, still at school at the time, the foundations of the performer and comedian that would become Wavis O'Shave were being laid in conversations with his friends. Wavis's childhood friend, Paul Tisman, remembers the laughs fondly.
I could go home with a sore stomach. I just couldn't stop it. It was addictive. I'd be out again and the hell with the homework. You know, it was just crazy. Really funny. He instigated something where we'd be all walking. And I mean, you're going back to the times when the towns and the streets were always seemingly busy. There was lots of people using buses. There were people going to somewhere, coming from somewhere. So there was always people out there. And of course, groups or gangs of people would be walking about. And we would be a collective of, could be up to a dozen. And once I think we saw somebody trip over and you laughed. You shouldn't have done, but you laughed. I think Wavis turned around and says, what do you think the laugh would be from them if they saw 12 people all trip over the same curb? So, of course, we all went and we just all went over at the same time. And that was that. And we thought, right, well, we'll do that every now and again. And he would lead it, you know, he would choreograph it.
Out of the pranks came his first artistic adventure, introducing the world to his own unique cocktail of comedy and surrealism by forming his first band, the Boar Stiffers. consisting of Wavis, Tin Whistle and Fig Roll. It's 1975, and we're only 1 year away from punk showing the world that anyone could form a band, but not a band like this. As you would expect from any band formed by a surrealist, the Bo Stiffers were a little unusual in that none of the band played a musical instrument, and their only purpose was to
bore the audience stiff as quickly as possible. So they were actually pleased the quicker that everybody started to kick off and leave.
A non-musical act, a non-musical thing that might entertain, it might not, but he didn't care. I suppose some people of his age, where they might have got to work apprenticeships and seriousness and girls, he didn't do it. He was still focused on this humour, this music thing.
That was unofficial Wavis biographer and photographer Gary Craig and Paul Tisman again. But where did the idea for such an unconventional band come from? Well, let's hear from the man himself, Wavis O'Shave.
The notion I had was, let's play music without musical instruments. This is how it all started. I used to go to hairdressers on West Hill Road called Vern's, right? And I call him Sweeney because I'd give everyone different names. And this time he was telling me, he said, oh, I nicked some Rollos from Woolworths on Saturday. Well, I was bloody outraged. I thought, it was a pillar of society. What do you mean you nicked some Rollos? And then a song came in my head, it was, put those Rollos down, Sween. Put those Rollos down. Rollo, Nick and Sweeney. Put those Rollos down.
And what was the entrance fee to see the burgeoning talent that would become Wavis? Once again, Paul Tisman shares his memories. But first, Gary Craig.
You know, I had to turn up with me slice of bread as an entry fee.
People would pay a nominal sum for a ticket, 10 or 20 pence. But certainly everybody was told that, yeah, you might have a ticket, but you're not getting in unless you've brought a slice of bread.
White bread was acceptable. Brown bread was classed as a forgery and you were turned away from the door. Or boiled eggs were used for entry. And if you'd brought a soft-boiled egg, that was a forgery and it was normally cracked over your head to check whether it was a forgery or it wasn't.
After Fig Roll left the band due to non-musical indifferences, new members were added. Anders, Geldwink, Teddy Anteater, Fatty Round and Hat, as they were christened by Wavis, must have been quite something to see, never mind here.
I wanted to do an underwater gig at Derby Street Baths, yeah? The rest of the band weren't up for that one.
The Bo Stiffers went on to self-produce two demo albums on C60 tapes, Black Shoes and Mongooses and Ogwell Ming's Cabbage Patch. The tapes piqued the interest of independent record label Company Records. It's 1978. A big year, the film Grease is released, Annie Hall wins the Best Picture Oscar, and the world is finally ready to meet a new comedy and musical creation, Wavis O'Shave.
I had a demo, we did it in Tinny Whistle's bathroom, which was to eventually become the EP, because EPs were fashionable in those days. I sent it to Beggars Banquet, who are an indie label. That was the first effort I made. I got a nice reply saying, it's unusual, and he wrote unusual upside down. But they were more interested in the time with working with a guy that just signed up called Gary Newman. And then in those days in the rock press, you down in the columns occasionally, you would see people say, send us a demo, you know, from these small labels. I sent a demo off, bang, straight away, you got a record deal. The lyrics drew him in, you know, which was always my strength. The lyrics, because they're so different.
Having signed to Company Records, Wavis was invited to Ragby Studios in Lincolnshire to record his first EP, Dennis Smokes Tabs, (John is a Fig Roll), (.
So he gave us the deal to do Dennis Smokes Tabs / John is a Fig Roll. Now, Dennis, we used to play football with him, and he used to smoke, but he didn't tell his parents, you see. And when he went home, he used to hide his pack of fags in this little crack in the brick wall outside his house. So one day we thought, we'll grass him up. So we rang his home number and his mum answered. We said, yo, Dennis Smokes Tabs! So Dennis Smokes Tabs was inspired by that. And the Fig Roll bit was John, who I gave him the name Fig Roll, because one day I said to somebody, he said, you know, John, don't you think he talks like a Fig Roll? Well, yeah, I suppose he does, you know. And that was it. He was Fig Roll from that moment on. So Dennis Smokes Tabs, John is a Fig Roll, came, Fig, you'll come out with some I'm a good producer. I won't waste nothing. Fig Roll, when he was in an argument, he'd come out. It's three examples. He'd be arguing with somebody. He was arguing with a woman. And all of a sudden he said, yeah, you think you're a woman because you don't eat fish cakes. I thought, I'm having that. He'd be having an argument. He'd say to people, just, oh, go and wash your laces. Arguing with a bloke on his doorstep. And the argument's going the predictable way. Then all of a sudden he says, you shouldn't crush bees to death with the end of your walking stick. I thought, I'm having that. And he'd come out with all these things. Inspired me for a lot of the songs, the things that he just threw away.
In the music industry newspaper, The New Musical Express, Danny Baker wrote in his review of Dennis Smoke's Tabs, they thankfully managed to stay clear of being merely wacky, and Lord, that's a damning adjective, and dish up as entertaining a handful as you can find this side of Smumpox, Montana. The following year, Wavis released his first album, Anna Ford's Bum, named after a popular newsreader of the time.
I had a bit of a soft spot for Anna. Yeah. Out of my league, she was, for sure. And I thought, right, there's got to be a tribute. So I'm going to do one. It's going to be called Anna Ford's Bum. The first half of the album, we recorded in trusty Fatty Round's kitchen because his parents used to go out early in the morning to go to work. And they had a massive Hammond organ in there, which did all sorts of wondrous stuff. So we had to wait till they went out at 9 o'clock in the morning. Then we'd all turn up and pile in there and use it. In fact, he would play it and we could record stuff because his parents could never work out why the electricity bill was massive. Side two, we recorded back at Waddington and Lincoln. As the world seems to know, I did pursue Miss Ford and present her with it, wearing a 4.5-foot plastic nose. That was me, not Anna. And that made the front page of the Sunday People National newspaper. There I was, you know, presenting her with this album. She still has it today because she ended up on a panel many years back. Chris Donald was on the panel and he thought he'd be a bit clever. He said, you heard of Wavis O'Shave? Oh, yes, yes. And yeah, she confirmed she's still got it safely.
If Anna wasn't familiar with the work of Wavis O'Shave, it must have been a little unsettling for her to meet a stranger who travelled the length of the country to propose marriage wearing a long, artificial nose and carrying an album named after her buttocks. And it's definitely an unusual name for an album. On the other hand, I do like the idea of music industry executives asking each other if they've heard the latest release from Anna Ford's Bum. Around this time, the man behind Wavis had a life-changing experience. From South Shields, Wavis travelled to Dumfries to spend time at the Samyer Ling Tibetan community. Here, he discovered the insights that would shape his worldview and underpin all of his future life.
I heard that there was a Tibetan community in Dumfries in Scotland. So I went there, and bearing in mind that I resisted my culture, okay, I learned a Tibetan training called Vajrayana. It kind of like, in a deep and profound fashion, sees through the illusion of life. You get the certificate and then you wave it and think, right, I can behave all right now because I've seen through all this. I'm sussed, you know. And Wavis, the dawning of Wavis was kind of connected with that way of thinking, seeing through the illusion of life.
But the allure of money and fame didn't sit easy with someone who's seen through the illusion of life.
You know, when I released the records and they went down really well, I got really scared, you know, because I did not want to be very popular. It was hard to keep it that way. Commercial success was beckoning me this way. And people, you know, attached to that want to make money out of me. So I got a little bit afraid by that. So when the inevitable offers for shows were there, again, to be unorthodox, I wouldn't do them, you know. So what happened was other people went out and did the shows as me. They didn't tell me when they first did this. Just thought, oh, you'll not mind. And I remember one night, Wavis O'Shave was in two separate towns the same night. And even today, people don't know. The Record Mirror reviewed one of them. Yes, he's Geordie accent. And the bloke who copied me was Yorkshire. So Wavis as a brand was just record, just vinyl. That's how I wanted to keep it. Because I had a reputation for being inaccessible.
So if you saw Wavis back then, you didn't. But it might be too late to get your money back. With the music genre successfully subverted, it was time to take on comedy. to the success of his music, Wavis was invited to perform on the Tyne Tees television youth-orientated series Check It Out by producer Malcolm Gerry.
Because Tyne Tees did a lot of music programmes. I can't remember them now. Razzmatazz, this, that. And Malcolm Gerry, who was usually the producer, liked the Wavis songs, you know. He said, come and do Check It Out or something. Anna Ford's Bum was out at the time. They wanted me to come and do, obviously, something musical, you know. Come and sing Don't Crush Bees or whatever. But me being me, nah, I ain't going to do something musical. How about I do a sketch? Are you capable? It's on the desk 30 minutes later. So I said, can we do a spoof? Yeah. It was Hootie Tabernacle, the leader of the California Nevis cult. He came to South Shields and he bought Mars and Rock and he was having it taken over to California bit by helicopters. You know, I said, this has got to be a spoof. So they got me their most famous trusted newsreader at the time. I said, well, the people will believe him. And we turned up to shoot it in Jesmond Dean. And I said, right, are you ready? We hadn't read the script. And I've got my answers ready. And he hadn't read the script. And we're ready to go. I'm going to have to play this by ear. Well, of course, he was carping all the time, wasn't he? He was cracking up. This is supposed to be a spoof, really serious. And he's cracking up all the time. But it was good fun. First time I was ever on the telly, that one.
At that time, Wavis had been creating and sharing homemade VHS videotapes around the estates of South Shields, the early 80s equivalent of going viral. The tapes contained sketches with a new comedy character, The Hard. With a black and white striped jumper, shorts and workman's boots, The Hard was a northeast stereotype taken to extremes. The Hard was so hard that he would also intimidate people with nonsensical threats such as, I'll punch you in your best friend's mustache.
I would guess I was probably one of the first people that ever met The Hard. It originated with just some sort of black and white photographs in his backyard at home, you know, because it was handy to have bricks and brick walls and hammers and things to demonstrate how hard he was. So you'd be standing in his backyard hitting himself with a hammer or a brick. He had his characteristic black and white stripy burglar's type jumper on and his big muscles. And he was demonstrating his hardness with hammers and bricks. So he would quite happily bounce a brick off his head or bounce a hammer off his hand and prove that it didn't hurt at all. Felt nout.
Or, as The Hard himself would say,
felt nout!
It's the early 1980s, and Channel 4 has asked Tyne Tees Television to produce its new flagship live music show, The Tube. The Tube ran from November 1982 to April 1987. Unafraid to court controversy, it was no ordinary music show. Presenters including Jules Holland, Paula Yates, Leslie Ash and Muriel Gray would introduce live performances from the best new bands, interviews with world stars and comedy from the hottest talent in the emerging alternative comedy scene. Live songs from Madonna, The Jam, U2, interspersed with comedy sketches from then unknowns Rick Mail, Alexi Sale and French and Saunders. When producer Malcolm Gerry was looking to fill a regular comedy slot on the anarchic ultra-cool music show, Wavis' sketch on Check It Out had stuck in his mind.
Check It Out was presented by a guy called Chris Cowie, who ultimately went on to become the producer of Top of the Pops. Check It Out was a teenage magazine program when teenage magazine programs were kind of before they were really invented. And it dealt with issues, you know, for young people. A very localized show. So it was never intended as such for the network. So we were able to focus on, you know, local talent. And obviously Wavis was perfect for that. And that really was the kind of gave us a taster. So when The Tube came along, it was a natural segue to put him in there. And I remember Jules and Paula, Jules Holland and Paula Yates, when they first saw him, they were like, what the, you know, are you going to put him on The Tube? I said, yep. And because everybody falls in love with him because, you know, he's just an extraordinary character. And I'll tell you, the crew, the film crew used to love going down to actually, you know, do the sketches, and you know they'd come back with some of the most extraordinary stories. You could hear their jaws dropping onto the mixing desk after they'd been down to do a shoot. You know, you're not going to believe what he did, Malcolm. Yes, I would.
You know, Malcolm thought we're a music show, but he'd seen the hard videos they all had there. Got to have him on the show. Will he come on the show? And the deal was, if I had an idea and I really wanted to film it, I'd get in touch with them. It was Gavin Taylor in particular. I'd say, Gavin, got an idea. So it gives us a little bit of time to book the date and we can do that. But I didn't really do half the stuff that I could have done.
The Hard wasn't the only way of his character that viewers met on the Tube. However, one character is lost to history. The Hard's posh cousin, Lord Lobsang Coldseamwig.
Then I did other characters like Mr. Ordinary Powder and Mr. Stereo, and most of the people didn't know it was me. Best one I ever did, they advertised it. And then I showed it because they gave me a crew all day to film it. And Floating Princess, it was the Hard's posh cousin, you know, who felt nothing. But his monocle, his top hat, his tails, and his roller car, which we actually had. And we filmed all that, and then it never turned up as advertised. Well, the crew had progressively got more and more drunken throughout the day and laughing and didn't film it properly. So that one irks.
Things were going well, and Wavis O'Shave was becoming well known. But fame has never been a goal for Wavis, so it was time for a change.
The thing is, when you're accepted, you're fixed. And I thought, no, don't want this. I'm going to have to change. Nobody who'd got their foot in the door, the music business and show business, and was becoming well known by their name, would then abandon it and start again. But Wavis did. So he did his own Doctor Who bit. Next thing you know, he's regenerated and he's Fofo Spearjig, another name that people couldn't pronounce very well. Because I used to give them names that they were either embarrassed to say or couldn't say it properly.
For most artists, the price of being on television is a loss of anonymity. Surely now, Wavis would have to give up his most prized possession, his real name.
The Tube never knew. When I used to get the checks off them, they had like Fofo Spearjig. I thought, how am I going to cash this, you know? It's just me having a bit of fun. It goes back to the illusion of life. Look, we're not really stuck together. We're not really anybody. What? I'm going to have one solitary name.
After the huge national success of The Tube, Wavis continued to avoid chasing fame, but instead was content to create more of what he loved. He continued to make music, with several self-produced singles and two more albums. Many of his classic tracks, such as Mauve Shoes Are Awful and Don't Crush Bees With The End Of Your Walking Stick, were included in indie music compilation albums. The last of Wavis's rare live performances was in 2009 as an unexpected opening act to an Oasis tribute band at Lincoln City Football Ground. Wavis fan Patrick O'Reilly was part of that adventure.
And it was through a guy that I knew who also knew Wavis. And so he'd organised this gig for an Oasis tribute band. And for some reason unknown to me, he'd asked Wavis to support, which seemed like an odd choice then, still seems like an odd choice now. The whole gig, though, people just stood mouths agape. They really weren't prepared for what they were seeing. Wavis finished. It was like a proper rock star exit because the door flew open to the function room. And it was a member of his family there. They had a car there with the engine running. And he just literally ran off stage, through, out and into the car. The only thing that the member of his family said was, as he passed, this man is an effing maniac.
But I really enjoyed it. I thought, I could have done this for a living, but I'm glad I didn't.
Wavis is a walking contradiction. Someone who never pursued fame, but achieved fame. Someone whose many names are well documented, except his own. Someone who could have done all of this for a living, but didn't. An artist who encourages you to take everything, and especially yourself, less seriously. And through his songs, his characters, and his sketches, Wavis O'Shave helps everyone see through the illusion of life. The many facets of Wavis O'Shave have left a lasting impression on those that are familiar with his work.
It just really appealed to me, that kind of anarchistic, daft humour that nobody really got, apart from those who are kind of in the know.
Yeah, it was nothing like I'd ever seen.
Anything that he does is never, you know, meant to, you know, hurt anybody, insult anybody in any way. It's all just about the fun, and it definitely has rubbed off on me and my whole outlook to life. You know, just don't take yourself or life too seriously. be a Wavis.
When we had these other comedians coming up, all of these people used to really love Wavis. So I think his legacy is much bigger than he actually gets credit for. You know, the word genius is banded around a lot, but he definitely turned the page of alternate comedy. He is a real, genuine Northeastern talent.
In the 1970s and 80s, there really wasn't an easy route into comedy or music for a working-class lad from the Northeast. So, to make a name for yourself, even if it's not your real name, in both of these art forms is a very rare and very impressive achievement, especially if your art is so off the beaten track that not everyone is willing or able to follow. These days, Wavis might have been a YouTuber or have his surreal output going viral on TikTok. And yes, a small amount of the original attitudes and content might feel uncomfortable for modern ears, but you could say that about mainstream TV at the time. What Wavis did was walk his own path. He didn't want to do live performances, so he didn't. He didn't want his name to be known, so it isn't. In every aspect, he undermined society's expectations. Society likes to label you with a name and put you in a simple category so that it knows what you are. And on one level, the work of Wavis O'Shave shows us that you can tear off all of the labels and create your own categories. But on a more fundamental level, it tells people everywhere who worry that they see the world a little differently, that you can create the world as you see it, and people will line up to look at the world through your eyes and laugh along and sing along. And if you don't agree, I'll punch you in your best friend's mustache. This episode of Jester's Forgotten Stories of Northeast Comedy was written and narrated by John Gibson, music by Sammy Dobson, and produced by Felt Nout Productions on behalf of Tynan Weir Archives and Museums.